The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now I'm joined by John Lee, who is executive editor of the Daily Mail Group, and Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst with Social Justice Ireland, to discuss the stories making the news this morning. And where we will start is with the front page of the Irish Times, which is very happy about what they're describing as the first major interview given to a newspaper by the new Taoiseach Simon Harris, in which he addresses his sort of political philosophy and ideology, but he also addresses the budget. And that's their headline: Taoiseach signals big budget giveaways. In a minute, I'll ask John for his assessment as to whether or not that is politically wise or makes a blind bit of difference to voters. But Michelle, given that you are a policy analyst, in terms of the citizenry, is this great news? Are we all, is it a late, late show budget? We're all in for something, it'll be nice.
No, I mean, it looks like that, but basically they're making the same mistake 3 years in a row. So he, you know, in the interview and in the article, the Taoiseach says there's going to be more one-off payments. And what they do is they artificially mask that people on lower incomes, you know, their real income has fallen year on year. Then you have the tax cuts, which are permanent, and they, you know, the more you earn, the more you benefit. And obviously, you know, it's looking to the budget. The Taoiseach says all the one-off payments are going to kick in basically before
Christmas.
Now, is the
logic of that not that what they are saying is you have an inflationary pressure, which is making it more expensive for everybody to get by? A lot of that is wrapped up in energy costs. We need to be careful about anything that will become permanent and systemic. So for those who are struggling, a one-off helps them over this hump, and hopefully inflation will be less of a problem down the track.
Well, no, because those who were struggling before energy costs. So if you're looking at income adequacy, it's not a one-off problem. It's an everyday problem. And yes, your energy bills and housing put pressure on that. But it's those people at the bottom who are impacted the most. They were struggling before this. They're really struggling now. And if you just look at the proportion of one-off payments, if you look at a pensioner last year, nearly 50% of what they got was one-off, which really masks the impact on them going forward. I suppose the other thing I found really interesting in that article, actually, is the Taoiseach references the $2 billion from the sale of AIB, or the state stake in that, to speed up, he calls them, vital infrastructure products, so projects, water, energy and housing. If you look at the vast sums of money that we have in terms of those one-off corporate tax revenues, why are we just relying on this $2 billion, which in the grand scheme of things, if you're going to address your water infrastructure, your energy infrastructure and housing, it's peanuts. So, I mean, what is the government's vision? And that's what I found interesting in that article. I don't see the vision for what this government is going to do in terms of resolving the housing crisis, or even when they go to the electorate, like, what is their answer? If you're going to rely on $2 billion and not in any way reference those other resources that you have, I mean, what are you going to do in terms of delivering a social dividend for people? You know,
how do you mean a social dividend?
So even before we had these corporate tax revenues, you know, we'd really record levels of economic growth from about 2016, really high employment rates. The country was doing really well. The social dividend is childcare, public transport, housing, you know, energy infrastructure, water infrastructure. As a state, we haven't been able to do that. Now with all this extra money...
And will they not say, sure, we're working on all of that. We're building houses fit to beat the band. We've just talked about the Dublin Transport Plan, which is in theory meant to improve the public transport through the city. We're trying to push through the water supply line from the Shannon through to... All of this stuff is continuing and we're using the surpluses to pay for it.
But we've been doing this since 2011. And if you just take homelessness, for example. So, Bajor, you know, about pre-2010... Homelessness was generally driven by really vulnerable circumstances of individuals. Now you have family and child homelessness, which is pretty much baked into the system. It's structural. That is the problem. And housing is one of the key issues here. And I don't think they can really claim any progress on housing. I mean, the Parliamentary Budget Office, so their own research office, produced a report last week that said, like, on the social housing list, so the social housing need is about 250,000 people. About 40% of that are children. You know, and in that interview that the Taoiseach gives, like, I don't see what his vision for helping those children is. He talks about child poverty. He talks about equality of opportunity. But what are they going to do? I mean, there's a budget, but then there's also an election looming. And from reading that, like, I can't see what their vision is to go to the country, to go to the people and say, this is why you should vote for us, because they haven't delivered. And from reading that, I don't see how they're going to be able to say what new things they can deliver.
On the topic of the election that is looming, to the politics of all of this, John, the Taoiseach seems to be getting a little bit irritated with people asking him when is the election going to be. He says it is only journalists and political colleagues who ask him and that the people don't actually care. And he said it more or less a million times. It's going to be in March. Stop asking me.
Yeah, it has become a either media generated or self generated discussion point without any other response for him. I think, but of course now you're going to ask me when it is. So, but I think the problem they have is that now that Simon Harris and Micheál Martin, to a degree, have said so often that they're going to run all the way, it'll be a rather difficult political stunt to pull it around to go when the majority of backbenchers and everybody else wants to see it, which is early. I've never seen the particular logic for going early, but nevertheless, if every person you meet in politics and everyone you speak to in politics says to me, as they are now, that it's going to be November, one has to expect it. I don't think they'd be affected by problems that hit, say, Gordon Brown in the past in Britain, where he had built up an expectation that it was going to be early and then didn't go. I don't think it'd be a huge problem for them to go all the way to March.
And what about the link to the budget? Because there is a sort of a sense knocking around that juxtaposing an election with a giveaway budget is useful at the ballot box. I'm not sure there's much proof of that, is there?
They would feel... I don't think there's much proof of a budget showing a quantifiable effect in a general election. Economic well-being shows a very, very positive effect in a budget outcome. I think they've been very happy with the polling and the reaction to the last couple of budgets they've had. They've done unusually well out of a budget. That's a hard one to quantify. Would an election in November capitalise on a budget giveaway? Well, it actually wouldn't. I had a story a couple of weeks ago where they have decided to front load, and it's been followed up since, to front load all double pension social welfare payments in the budget. They would all be paid in December. So if you're having a budget an election in November with the promise of a giveaway on social welfare and everything else in December and January, that's not much use to you anyway. I still am a very lone voice. I still wouldn't be surprised if they went to March. I haven't seen the political logic for everything else, but nevertheless, I think the one to watch, and we're speaking about the budget, funnily enough, is the budget vote. Simon Harris was elected Taoiseach in April, was it? So it seems so long ago, on a majority of 19. If that majority is halved, say, or if the majority is only 3 or 4, I think they will go. But if that majority increases, and don't forget, 3 opposition TDs have been elected as MEPs, technically the opposition is down, I think they'll go all the way.
Now, to the actual numbers in the budget, thanks largely to Pfizer and Apple and a couple of other big multinationals, it looks like, according to the reporting, we are going to be neck deep in cash, thanks to another big surplus. What is it that you are suggesting that they should spend it on, Michelle?
Well, I suppose there's two elements. You've your current expenditure, and this money that you're talking about, I mean, it's not current revenue. It's been booked now, but it won't be there in a number of years. So, I mean, obviously, they've 2 funds they set up last year, the Climate and Infrastructure Fund and the Future Ireland Fund. So a certain amount will be allocated to those, but there's no detailed plan on actually what that money is going to be used for. So I would like to see that published. But then there's the things that we need to do now. So the Taoiseach referenced water, energy, housing. But simple things like school places for children with disability. And I'm talking about the capital element here, like putting those classrooms in place, whether it's special schools or mainstream school. You know how much it's going to cost. You know where those children are. It should be used on that. But then you're also going to have to look at, well, those rooms have to be staffed. You're going to have to raise the revenue to pay for those educational professionals, for example. So it's a trade-off of both, but really it has to be focused on the problems we face now. And those problems are housing, water and energy. Because I don't think you can really go to the people and say, yes, we have substantial amounts of money, but you know what? We're going to keep that to solve the future problems, not the problems that we have today, because people won't accept that. You know, if you're staying at home, saving desperately, trying to buy a home, and if you're a single person, it's more or less out of reach. that's no good to you to say, well, you know, we're putting that in the future infrastructure fund. So in 20 years time, if we have a problem, we're going to deal with it. So I do think they're going to have to use a substantial amount of those excess resources in addition to the 2 billion from the sale of the government stake in AIB to really deliver on those things, because that's what's going to get you the social and economic dividend that will raise living standards for everyone. Because the things that are putting pressure on people really is the cost of housing, the cost of energy, the cost of food. If you address those infrastructure, you can at least control the cost of housing or at least reduce it. And if you invest in your renewables, you can impact on the cost of energy.
If you want to get in touch, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents, or you can get us on WhatsApp 087-1400-106. We were talking about the changes that are coming in how you can travel through Dublin city centre. Hi, Anton. At least there's a plan for Dublin traffic. There's no plan for Galway traffic, which is gridlocked every day of the week. Our so-called politicians haven't got the guts, let's put it that way, to tackle it, says a fed up Galway bus driver. Yesterday afternoon, it took me 50 minutes to get from Phibsborough to High Street. Next, they'll introduce a congestion charge. Another, how do you get to the Phoenix Park from the city centre with these new restrictions? Well, my understanding is you'd go up to O'Connell Bridge, turn left onto Dalier Street, go up Dame Street, come down past Christchurch, turn left back onto the Quays. It'll only take you 3.5 days.
But the driver told me you can go down a laneway in Fleet Street now. And get back onto the Quays.
Oh, well, now you've wrecked it for everybody. Now everybody knows about the lane.
I'll be walking.
Oh, as in go Dalier Street onto Westmoreland Street, Fleet Street, and then down a little lane.
There's a laneway off Fleet Street that brings you back onto the Quays.
My God, that lane is going to turn into a nightmare if that's the case. 53106, if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. The other story that is getting a lot of attention at the moment is the continuing, we are told, rise of the far right. The Examiner saying far-right violence is inevitable. And John's paper, The Mail, tackle violent disorder with swift justice. The vast majority favour fast-track trials for anti-immigration protesters. And this is, I mean, this is the continuing drumbeat. This is the social media, a lot of stuff on Twitter Spaces, which is the sort of the audio version of people fomenting or requesting or suggesting violence and public aggression.
Yes, and it's had a political effect. What has happened here in the last year, in a strange kind of way, for a government that has failed to handle the situation at all well, because there was a general feeling that the far right was a small group of people in Ireland that couldn't have much effect on either the national discourse or on safety on our streets, and that was rudely interrupted last November, and it was completely misplaced. They are having a huge influence on order on the streets and everything else, these small groups of people, admittedly. But the major political effect has been to throw Sinn Féin into chaos. They have failed to grasp how they, as an ultra-nationalist radical party, should deal with this. And again, as I say, in a contradictory fashion, the government that has failed to handle it will probably benefit from this situation at the polls. Helen McEntee has had a very, very quiet summer, which, unlike Simon Harris, is not unusual for a politician. But I think she was very, very fortunate to hang on to her job. Simon Harris has committed to dealing with this. And I think to a degree he has dealt with disorder in the streets a little more effectively.
But the way to commit with it? Because what the Mail, your own paper, is saying is that effectively we need to have fast-tracked trials so that if somebody is rioting on a Friday, they're in Clink on Tuesday.
But, and as a poll today, Mork Research shows with our paper this morning that there is a favour amongst about, I think, is it
70%, 7-0,
want to see fast-track trials. Good luck with that, unfortunately, in the Irish justice system. In Britain, they have a far larger infrastructure, court infrastructure that went on to deal with that. That may yet happen, but certainly from very senior people in government, I wrote a story, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, where they were very, very jaundiced in their view of the system, of how the system handled those arrests on far-right activity and any kind of activity when it came to disorder in the streets, rather than put a political label on it. They did feel, though, and this was cabinet ministers, that the Gardaí were dealing effectively with these individuals, that they were making the arrests, but they were unhappy that from wherever that, and I'm not focusing on whoever that was, from the DPP's office on through the courts. It was extremely slow.
Well, Michelle, to the actual issue that is underlying this, the Examiner is reporting on the type of discussions and type of threat that is there. And they say that in one discussion, and this is on the Twitter platform, a user warns violence is inevitable and not far away. Another says action is needed. It's not going to have a happy ending if it's all political. We can't solve this solely by voting. We need to get a few people in here. The odds are stacked against us. It's time for action. And then they cite subsequently people suggesting that they would smear pig blood on buildings so that they would be uninhabitable for people of a Muslim faith, and suggesting that discussions about weapons should be done offline for their own risk of prosecution. None of that sounds good.
No, and they also refer to that every member of the Dáil should be dragged out, kicking and screaming, and brought to justice. So it kind of gives you a sense of where these people are. And like, some of it is quite incoherent in terms of, you know, the odds are stacked against them. They wanted for Ireland to be for Western Europeans, but then just for the Irish. But the problem is, and I suppose there was a feeling, I think, particularly in some quarters, that this wasn't really an issue. But then in other quarters, it was felt it was an issue. And what ultimately is a huge housing crisis has now become a migrant crisis. And I think the problem here is, at this point now, those people that are on the Twitter sphere, etc. So John is really right. The justice system is really slow when it comes to, you know, from arrest to actual charge to court to sentencing. But what they also saw was a situation where, you know, certain groups of people could stop a bus on a public road, get on that bus, check who was on it. If I were to go onto Dame Street now and stop a Dublin bus and get on that bus and ask to see everyone's ID, I mean, I'm not entitled, but that was allowed to happen. You know, they were allowed to set up outside areas which were going to be used as temporary accommodation. And they were allowed to stop people unloading, you know, workers unloading those trucks to bring in beds and other equipment.
And of course, the other thing with all this is, it isn't coincidence this is happening. I don't know if you noticed, John, but there was an Irish account on Twitter that tweeted a video of immigrant camps being set up. The video asserts that it's in Athlone. And it says camps like this are being built all over Ireland. One of the top replies, Elon Musk weighing in to say to his several, I think 150 million followers, they look like barracks. Now, that's not accidental that Elon Musk is in there stirring and trying to create that kind of divisiveness to feed activity on his platform. Yet nothing can be done. That's just now the way the discourse is.
I'm amazed at his interest in Ireland. You know, when you've got that demographic you're aiming at, one would think the larger countries are of more interest.
But surely all he wants is some instance that he can cite. All he wants is there is another immigrant issue, whether it be Ireland, whether it be the UK, whether, I mean, a bit like Tucker Carlson doing his programme when we had the riots in Ireland. It is just grist to the mill. Who cares where the grist comes from?
They felt, and probably to answer my own question, I know I was in the United States after the riots in Dublin. And there was an interest because Ireland was seen as this nirvana somewhat that was advertised to them by our authorities as, you know, a quiet, clean, somewhat throwback of a country. And then suddenly, if this can happen in Ireland, it can happen anywhere, I suppose, is the message. I think we can get a hold of it here a lot quicker, but the rapidity with which it's moving online again, and I've written a few stories, and it's why it's fresh in my mind in the last few weeks, about government concern about, again, the rapidity of how they can deal with social media companies. And that any attempts, for instance, I think the latest problem they had was with threats made to Simon Harris on Instagram. And the Gardaí, again, moved with alacrity, and it took them more than 2 days to have that removed from social media. It was distributed then on other social media outlets, and these are extremely serious threats that were made to his family. Disgraceful. And Mary Lou MacDonald has had felt that it's necessary to go to the Gardaí about threats made to her in social media, and we move on from there. It's a cross-party problem.
And it's beyond politics. We were talking to Paul Reid, former CEO of the HSE last week, and he was saying he had the same.
And you see, the problem with it, first of all, is, and I haven't been a victim of it myself, is the psychological effect. But I think I'm robust enough. I certainly see women that I'm close to, the threats become sexualized on top of everything else. They comment on their on their appearance, but often the biggest effect that will have on a person, especially a politician, is an indication of they know where you live and where you are and what your movements are. And then it is not much of a step to go, some lunatic can then step out of the shadows and hit me with a bottle or something far, far more serious. So, and studies show there is a link between violent and threatening language on social media and the effects that manifest themselves, not least what we saw in the United States in January 2021, wasn't it? January 6th, when a lot of the organisation was made.
And let us not forget, we had an assassination attempt on a former president only a couple of weeks ago, which can't be coincidence. 53106, if you want to get in touch, 087-1400-106. The government should come through on its promise to abolish the hated universal social charge. Hard to trust a government that doesn't keep its promises. Another, I'd love to know who in government represents the middle class citizen who's well qualified, PhDs, etc., working full-time in an excellent job but is still living at home because there's nowhere to buy in a decent area for less than half a million. All new builds start at least half a million for a two or three bedroom. Also met a friend yesterday with their own company and they were trying to move from an apartment into a three bedroom house in Dublin 16, but they were priced out of the market because they went up to 900 grand. These are the people keeping the country going. And in relation to traffic, people are going to abandon the city centre. Businesses will close and restaurant shops are already closing. Also, older people who can't jump on and off a bus or a Lewis are now going to be excluded from the city centre. Wheelchair users, young and old, are being excluded too. It's such a shame, and it'll drive more traffic onto the M50, which is already struggling with the volume. 53106, if you have a viewer, 087-1400-106. News overnight, Michelle, that Robert F. Kennedy has decided to abandon is the actual phrase, but I think he's calling it pause or hesitate.
Suspension.
Or suspend,
yeah,
the very
he's
thing.
Sort of suspended.
I'm not sure that it was ever there to be suspended, but his political campaign is over and he's thrown his weight in behind Donald Trump.
Yes. Look, I don't think his polling was that great. I guess it's going to be what the impact is in the swing states, really. He obviously has a niche support. The problem is obviously his family and their tradition with the Democrats. So it remains to be seen how much of that support goes to Donald Trump, how much of those people are going to turn out anyway and vote, and what that really means. I mean, it seems quite early for it now. I'm not sure how much of a bounce it's going to be for Donald Trump. And
look, is this all because of the bear story? Did you see the bear story?
That he attacked and killed a bear.
He bear undertaker.
He found a dead one.
Oh, yes.
Put it in his car, then realised he had to take a flight so he couldn't leave a dead bear in his car at the airport. So he staged a bear accident involving a cyclist who didn't exist and then left the state. Like, it's unusual. Between that and having a dead parasitic worm in his head, it's a campaigning strategy we hadn't seen from many other candidates.
I don't think it really worked.
Evidently not.
Evidently not. But, I mean, it remains to be seen how much of a bounce Donald Trump gets. I suppose all the papers this weekend, you know, they have a lot about, it was the Democrat Party convention, so there's a lot about Kamala Harris and all the papers. And I suppose what really came out of it, I mean, I'm not sure how much RFK is, and that is an acronym, how much that will impact. So what's come out for me from reading it is, you know, Donald Trump, if he keeps on with the personal attacks, it's not going to work for him. But still, I still don't really know what Kamala Harris in terms of policy stands for either. You know, obviously she does have an advantage in that she's not Joe Biden, and she's managed to reframe Donald Trump as strange, weird. And actually there's an interesting piece out from underneath that she's not treating him as an equal, you know, as a political equal. And I think that will work well for her. But if you want to get people out in the swing states to vote for you, you need to give them something to vote for. And as of yet, I haven't really, I can't see what that is.
Well, I'll put that to the head of Democrats Abroad, who's going to be joining us just after 10 o'clock to look back at the Democratic National Convention that had run this week and give us an assessment of where they stand. And we'll see what Kamala stands for. Before we wrap up, John, one of the other things, of course, that is being covered extensively this weekend is the death and funeral of Nell McCafferty. An awful lot of journalists and writers, Matt Cooper in your own paper, reflecting on having been her editor in the Sunday Tribune, which seems to have been a challenging job at the time, and Olivia O'Leary as well, writing about her.
Yeah, I encourage people to read Matt's piece. It's very good. It's also good and something that maybe journalists find interesting, but the nuts and bolts of putting together a paper, which isn't always about what people think it is. I would say if I was Niall McCafferty and an editor of mine said I was anything other than challenging, I'd be insulted. So I can't imagine the public will really feel sympathy for Matt that too much copy that had to be cut back was a problem. I dealt with Niall briefly during the 2007 election when she worked for us, and she was something of a character which people use. It's something that's dying out in journalism, and I don't mean figuratively, and politics as well, is that an eccentric, which she was, is not as accommodated as they once were in journalism. Now, when I come into journalism, I'm not saying Niall was certainly one of those people, but it was a hard drinking profession that tolerated an awful lot of lunatics, probably myself included. So she may have been challenging according to Matt, but I think what shines through in all the tributes is her talent as a writer. And that is an ageless thing. She had a huge effect on Irish society, again, somewhat forgotten, but there was a different kind of soapbox there as opposed to social media when we were growing up, and your journalism and newspapers, your appearances on the Late Late Show, and that's where I first remember her, I think, were extremely effective in changing Irish society, a misogynistic, sexist society that she was a strong voice in campaigning against. Now, not everyone would have agreed with her views in the North, but she was from there, so she could speak with more sense than most of us on it.
John, thank you very much. That is John Lee, Executive Editor of the Daily Mail Group. Likewise, thank you very much, Michelle. Michelle Murphy, Research and Policy Analyst at Social Justice Ireland.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.